When the forgers at Langley finished with Argrow's court file, it fit in a cardboard box and was flown to Jacksonville on a small jet along with three agents. It contained, among many other things, a 51-page indictment handed down by a grand jury in Dade County, a correspondence file filled with letters from Argrow's defense lawyer in the U.S. Attorney's Office, a thick file of motions and other pre-trial maneuverings, research memos, a list of witnesses and summaries of their testimonies, a trial brief, jury analysis, an abstract of the trial, pre-sentencing reports, and the final sentence itself. It was reasonably well organized, though not too neat to arouse suspicion. Copies were smudged, and pages were missing, and staples were hanging off, little touches of reality carefully added by the good folks in documents to create authenticity. 90% of it would not be needed by Beach and Yarber, but its sheer heft made it impressive. Even the cardboard box had some age on it. The box was delivered to Trumbull by Jack Argrow, a semi-retired real estate lawyer in Boca Raton, Florida, and brother of the inmate. Lawyer Argrow's state bar certification had been faxed to the proper bureaucrat at Trumbull, and his name was on the approved list of attorneys. Jack Argrow was Roger Leiter, a 13-year man with a law degree from Texas. He'd never met Kenny Sands, who was Wilson Argrow. The two shook hands and said hello, while Link looked suspiciously at the cardboard box sitting on the table. "What's in there?" he asked. "It's my court records," Wilson said. "Just paperwork," Jack said. Link stuck a hand in the box and moved some files around, and in a few seconds the search was over, and he stepped out of the room. Wilson slid a paper across the desk and said, "This is the affidavit. Wire the money to the bank in Panama. Then get me written verification so I'll have something to show them." "Less 10%. Yes, that's what they think." The Geneva Trust Bank in Nassau had not been contacted. To do so would have been futile and risky. No bank would release funds under the circumstances Argrow was creating, and questions would be raised if he tried. The wire transfer going to Panama was new money. "Langley is quite anxious," the lawyer said. "I'm ahead of schedule," the banker replied. The box was emptied on a table in the law library. Beach and Yarber began sifting through its contents, while Argrow, their new client, watched with feigned interest. Spicer had better things to do. He was in the middle of his weekly poker game. "Where's the sentencing report?" Beach asked, scratching through the pile. "I want to see the indictment," Yarber mumbled to himself. They found what they wanted and both settled into their chairs for a long afternoon of reading. Beach's choice was quite dull. Yarber's, however, was not. The indictment read like a crime narrative. Argrow, along with seven other bankers, five accountants, five securities brokers, two lawyers, 11 men identified only as drug traffickers, and six gentlemen from Colombia, had organized and run an elaborate enterprise designed to take drug proceeds in the form of cash and turn them into respectable deposits. At least $400 million had been laundered before the ring was infiltrated, and it appeared as though their man Argrow was right in the thick of things. Yarber admired him. If half the allegations were true, then Argrow was a very smart and talented financier. Argrow became bored with the silence and left to stroll around the prison. When Yarber finished reading the indictment, he interrupted Beach and made him read it. Beach enjoyed it too. "Surely," he said, "he's got some of the loot buried somewhere." "You know he does," Yarber agreed. $400 million, and that's just what they could find. What about his appeal?" "Doesn't look good. The judge followed the guidelines. I see no error." "Poor guy. Poor guy my ass. He'll be out 4 years before me." "I don't think so, Mr. Beach. We've spent our last Christmas in prison."
"Do you really believe that?"
Hatley asked. Indeed I do. Beach placed the indictment back on the table, then stood and stretched and paced around the room. We should have heard something by now, he said, very softly, though no one else was there. Patience. But the primaries are almost over. He's back in Washington most of the time. He's had the letter for a week. You can't ignore it, Hatley. He's trying to figure out what to do. That's all.